Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Floss Weekly with John O'Bacon, episode 114 for March 27th, 2010. Ada Lovelace Day. It's time for Floss Weekly, the show that covers free, libre, and open source software. Here to talk to us about it all, Mr. John O'Bacon,
Ubuntu
Community Manager. Good to see you, John O. Randall again has the week off. He's got a job.
He has.
And we're so happy that our little guy has found employment.
I'm proud of him.
we're not going to make a big deal about him not being here. So there.
So moving on.
We are going to... Now, we have a different guest scheduled. What happened to Dan? He got sick?
Yeah, so we originally had Dan Lopez from the Linux Foundation. He was going to come on to Floss and talk about... he's the guy behind Linux.com. And he also runs like his own project called MuseAmp. He's a really, really nice guy. Really interesting guy. He's actually one of my neighbors. He lives just down the road. So,
well, I hope it's not serious.
Yeah, it's not too bad. I mean, he's
in the hospital, which is never good.
Yeah, but he's on the mend. Good. So unfortunately, he had to dip out. So,
but his loss is our gain.
It is. So thanks a lot, Dan. today is Ada Lovelace Day, which is a day in which we celebrate the work that women have been doing in technology and science. And there's been this kind of global effort for people to just highlight these kinds of achievements. And I tried to get the founder of the Ada Lovelace Day campaign on the show, but unfortunately she's busy. She said
she's a little busy, yeah.
Yeah, it's probably the worst day, actually.
Yesterday, tomorrow, no problem. Today, no.
Yeah, exactly. So instead, I asked a good friend of mine, Amber Grainer, who is the leader of the Ubuntu Women Project, to come on. And it's in many ways more of an appropriate guest, given the fact that this is Floss Weekly. She's involved in encouraging women into an open source and free software community. So, yeah.
Well, we're really glad to get Amber on. And as I mentioned, next week, Randall will be back. We'll be talking about the Cluster Challenge, the ACM.
Yeah, Cluster Computing Doug Smith, the ACM IEEE Cluster Challenge.
So. Yeah, look forward to that. Meanwhile, let's get Amber on the line via the magic of Skype, which I wish we had an open source alternative to, but we are stuck.
We do indeed. Welcome, Amber. Welcome to Floss Weekly. It's good to have you on here. So today,
thank you guys for having me.
Well, so originally we had another guest scheduled, and obviously we've got you on here because it's Ada Lovelace Day today. So just explain to us what Ada Lovelace Day is.
Well, Ada Lovelace Day is a day where, like, we ask people to blog about women in technology and women in technology and science. Because really often women's contributions to those fields go really unnoticed sometimes. And they're kind of a silent contributor to both science and technology. So on Ada Lovelace Day, which is today, we ask people to blog or video or podcast or whatever they want to do to share women's contributions in both science and technology with the world.
We should mention that Ada Lovelace, Countess of Lovelace, was in a 19th century computer programmer.
Yes.
She, even before there were computers, some people even say she was the first computer programmer. She worked with Charles Babbage on his analytical engine. And wrote
Indeed, Babbage and Lovelace, they fight crime.
It does sound like that, doesn't it? It does sound like that. So kind of a great prototype for women in computing. The first computer programmer was a woman and the only child of poet Lord Byron. I don't know if that has anything to do with anything.
Indeed. So, I mean,
she also died at 36, but that's another story entirely.
That's for tomorrow.
Yeah.
So it begs the question. It begs the question, Amber, that, you know, playing devil's advocate, but why aren't there more women in science and technology, do you think?
Well, I can't speak for all women. I can only speak for me. I know that my first computer I actually got in like 1984 was a TRS-80 Model 3, but it was sort of like this novelty thing, and nobody really encouraged me to do anything with it. They just said, oh, here, play with it, and whatever. So I don't think it's a matter of women not wanting to. I think sometimes we just get busy. I think sometimes we do, and as women, we have so much on our plate and so many things that we want to accomplish that sometimes technology, as far as I'm concerned, took a back seat to other hobbies and interests and things that I wanted to do. So, right. I think it's just a matter of encouraging women to take part in it and let them know that they are welcome and they are wanted and their skills are they have great skills and abilities and just encourage them at a young age so that they don't get wrapped up in, or maybe they start out with wanting to be in technology, but then something else comes along and people encourage them to do that rather than stick with their love of technology or science.
And I mean, it seems from some of the writings that on the internet regarding the topic of women in open source, a lot of people will cite the Flosspolls poll, which basically said, or the research that basically said that there is a smaller percentage of women actively participating in open source as opposed to in the proprietary software world. Do you feel like there's something in the environment, in the open source environment, that is less attractive for women? I mean, do you think that there's something preventing women from participating in open source in general?
I don't know that there's you see this physical barrier, but I know for me, I was on the outskirts for 15 years, not really getting involved with it. And it wasn't because somebody said, no, you can't. It was just because somebody didn't say, oh, you can do this. And nobody really encourages other women to do those things. So it's not like a barrier that you can see or even one that's there written anywhere, but it's definitely an undercurrent that's flowing through the open source community.
Right. And what do you think we can do to kind of combat against that? I mean, what do you think are the opportunities for kind of making the environment more, acceptable and more approachable for women to join?
Well, I think there's a lot of things that all groups can do. And one of those things is like in Ubuntu, we have the Ubuntu Women Project, and it's just about encouraging women. It's not, though we do tackle some social political issues from time to time, but that's not our main goal. Our main goal is just encouraging women and being a springboard into the community, into open source, and to give them avenues and to just pretty much lay the roadmap out and say, here it is, pick your path.
Right, right. I mean, so there's been some kind of, again, this is a big topic, right? And there's lots of different views on it, but there's been a lot of chatter in the past about how, when women have joined, I know a lot of female friends of mine who've joined various open source communities have said, I joined IRC and as soon as I joined and someone saw that I had a female name, people were asking me for photos and, these ignorant, immature little assholes on the internet were not treating the other person as a person but just as an object. What's been your experience with this? Have you seen this kind of behavior in your experiences with open source?
I personally haven't had that happen to me any of the IRC channels that I've been in. And I visit most of the Ubuntu channels, some of the Fedora channels, there are just various IRC channels, and so I haven't ever had anybody say that to me, but then again, I kind of handle stuff like that tongue in cheek, so it all depends on how everybody handles it differently. I might have something rude to say back, somebody else would. But I haven't experienced that, but I have seen that happen. I have been in an IRC channel where somebody comes in, I won't say that having a somewhat flirty of a nick is an excuse for people to do that, but they have a playful nick and somebody says, oh, well, let's thinks to themselves, oh, this will be fun to ask them questions about their gender or do you have a picture or do you have a website, things like that. And Right. I know that it's a huge it's just trollish behavior, and I hate that it happens, but I have seen it happen. That's what kick bans are for.
we wield the mighty band hammer here. Yes.
So how do you think that people should deal with that kind of behavior? I mean, a lot of us hang out in IRC every day. And you know, we can see this kind of behavior coming, you know, happening sometimes. What do you think is the most appropriate way with your advice that somebody who's just a participant in the channel can deal with that kind of behavior? Do you think we should just kick people out, or do you think somebody should take them to one side and have a word with them, or what would be your recommendation?
Well, for me personally, I mean, I've seen it both ways. I've seen people bring nukes to knife fights, so to say, like the minute somebody comes in and even gives a trollish vibe that they get kicked out of a room. And I don't think that I advocate that, but I think that you PM somebody, you let them know that behavior's not accepted behavior. If they keep doing it, you say something in public, and then the next thing you say goodbye and you just kick them out of the room.
So going back to where you love us day, I mean, it sounds like a very, very positive event. I mean, do you have any kind of input on what the kind of things that people have been doing around the world? What kind of events and activities that people have been up to?
Well, I know I've seen at least probably 30 to 40 people that I know personally that have been profiled today for At a Loveless Day. But then if you go to the At a Loveless website, which is findingatta.com, they had this great little map there that shows where people are blogging from, you know, where, because people there's this opportunity to pledge and fill out where you're from, and then even link your blogs or your posts to the website, so you can see where people are blogging from. And so far, we've gotten, I guess, 2,000, a little over 2,000 pledges. I don't know exactly how many people have actually blogged so far today, but I know that it's like 50 hours of blogging from the time, you know, it rolls over to 000 on the 24th all the way to 2,400 tonight. In all the different time zones and stuff, it equals about 50 hours of available time to blog.
That's neat.
So, that's cool.
This is a great page. Can we add this show to that? I guess we could.
Oh, yeah. I think so.
Yeah, you just put the link in.
Good. I'm doing it right now.
Well, we originally, I mean, Amber's, so I've known Amber for a long time, and we originally tried to get the founder of the Ava Loveless Day campaign on the show. Unfortunately, she's going to be at the event in London that's going on. It seems like a lot of people have been organizing like regional get-togethers and parties and things like that as well. You know, all over the world. Have you seen some of that going on as well, Amber?
For At a Loveless Day, or just in general, like people getting together for different events? So I'm sorry.
As in predominantly At a Loveless Day, but also people getting together around this topic. I mean, there's been a lot of discussion online, but do you know if people get together for physical events to kind of figure out how to kind of raise awareness of equality in open source?
Well, I know, I don't know specifically about people getting together for At a Loveless Day, but I do know that people get together, Linux Chicks folks at many of the events, like at OzCon or at Scale last month, they have chapters that get together and talk about how do we raise awareness, how do we get more people involved. So it does happen, and it's encouraged. And there's Geeknicks, she's geeky, and gosh, so there's a lot. There's too many, actually, for me to name.
So this was going to be my next question, is that I know that just off the top of my head, you've got Ubuntu Women, you've got Debian Women, you've got Linux Chicks, there's the Geek Feminism blog, there's things like Ada Loveless Day. There's lots of different campaigns. How do they differ? I mean, how do they vary, and do these campaigns work together?
Well, yes. I know from my standpoint, I know when I'm at events, I do go and talk to all the other women, open source women groups that are there to see, you know, what we can do as a collaborative effort. Because we're not, you know, we're not on opposite teams, and we're not on opposing teams. We're all in this together. But I think what varies is maybe the distribution, like you said, like Debian women or Ubuntu women or Fedora women. So that, you know, it differs in the distribution, but I don't think it differs in the message or the goal, and that goal being to increase women's participation and contribution to open source.
Right, right. So now let's move on to Ubuntu women then. So you're the leader of the Ubuntu Women Project. Can you give us some background on Ubuntu Women and the goals there?
Yes. This group was started back in 2007. Yes, 2007 is when it actually got like the charter or permission to become an official Ubuntu group. And at first there was like a mailing list, an IRC channel, and then there was the forums and the website. So that Vid Ayer started that, and then Elizabeth Crumbaugh sort of came in and kind of mushed it all together to have just one, you know, one cohesive Ubuntu women group instead of like four separate little entities going on everywhere. And so kind of fast forward to UDS, last UDS in Dallas, and we rolled out a plan to have like some formal leadership and kind of bring the group to the forefront, not keep it in the shadows, but sort of let people know about it. Cause a lot of people don't know about it. I was surprised how many people who've been in the community, since 2007 that don't know about it. And so it's time to sort of say we're here. We're a springboard into the community. And one of the things that we try to do is, it's just give, like, encourage women to participate, and not only in Ubuntu, but in greater open source communities. Like, if you need help preparing a session to be able to we have mentors who will say, hey, let me look at your slides. I'll help you with the content. Or we have people who are core devs. We have Sarah Hobbs is one of the only female core devs in Ubuntu, and she's part of our group as well. We have Mackenzie Morgan, who's a Motu, so she does all the packaging and stuff. So we also have mentors in the technical roles as well as non-technical roles. So the goal is not just to get women to come in, but to also keep to retain them, not so they just kind of visit and say, oh, this is kind of a great novelty kind of thing and then leave, but just to keep them involved in open source. Even if they move on to a different distribution, they're still involved and still bringing other people in.
And what kind of, can you give us some examples of some of the projects that the team is working on to do that kind of work?
Yes. We just wrapped up with, earlier this month, with International Women's Day, where we had a competition to have people tell their stories, like how they discovered Ubuntu. And we encouraged women to write their stories. We then let the community vote on them. So the community picked one story that they voted on. So we had one winner that was popular vote. We had one winner that you chose because you liked their story. And then we had a random drawing winner. So we're trying to raise awareness that way too, because who doesn't like swag? I mean, who doesn't like a prize pack and that kind of stuff?
So terrorists.
So then the other thing that we're working on right now is something called World Play Day. Now, we're still working out the details of that, but it will roll out May 28th. And what we're going to do is ask kids, girls in particularly, to send in candid shots of them using Ubuntu and what they use it for. And we're actually going to give away a Dell Mini 10N. And right now it says it comes with Moblin, but I'm going to see if Dell can't put UNR on it though.
Much better. I like it much better. Yeah.
So initiatives like that to get people involved. Again, who, you know, what kid doesn't want an opportunity to win a 10V? I mean, a 10N. So, just things like that. So that raises awareness in the greater community. The other things we're doing, we're going to revamp our website. We've already started, updating our, wiki pages. We're going to revamp the mentoring program so that we get more mentors, not reinvent the wheel, but kind of take advantage of the mentors that are already in the community.
Right,
so those are
right.
Some of the things we're doing.
I thought that the International Women's Day that you mentioned earlier on, where a bunch of people submitted stories of how they got involved in Ubuntu, I thought that was such a wonderful campaign. And some of the stories were really heartwarming. I mean, seeing how people had joined the community and how they got involved in Ubuntu and how it enabled different parts of their life. Is that the kind of thing that you'd like to see more with the project? Is kind of like this kind of positive outreach, people telling stories and sharing those stories with other people?
Well, yeah, I think focusing on the positive stuff has, it keeps morale up and people want to join groups that are positive. People want to join stuff that's high energy. People want to join groups that are doing things. I mean, if a group is kind of like stagnant pond water and just a mosquito breeding ground, nobody wants to be part of it. So, so we want to be active. We want to move. We want to encourage not only women, but I mean, the group, it is called Ubuntu Women, but it's open to everybody. So maybe there's some guy that doesn't feel comfortable hopping into the Devel channel and asking a question. They're more than welcome to come in to our channel and say, okay, what do I do from here? So we're not exclusive. We're very inclusive. So, we want to encourage that. However, and I'm going to caveat this, because if there is bad behavior, I mean, just really trollish bad behavior, or just something so egregious that, you know, you talk to the person and it doesn't work, or you send them an email and it doesn't work, or, you know, that kind of stuff, then yeah, I mean, there's going to probably be opportunities where we have to say something publicly as a group. But the opinions are so wide and so varied that it's very hard to get, a consensus of what, you know, what the reaction should be. So, yeah. I don't want to speak for anybody else, but, you know, we want to focus on the positive.
And it seems like, you know, within the melting pot that is a community, you've got so many different perspectives and experiences and cultural, cultural backgrounds that are coming into play. Do you think that you can create a standard set of expectations for good behavior on what constitutes bad behavior? Or do you think that you just got to play it by ear on a kind of a case-by-case basis?
I think it's something you got to play by ear. I mean, as a society, we have like these moral guidelines, but then, you know, somebody can say, well, that's your morality, not mine. And so who am I to dictate morality? But at the same time, we do have a set of, on our wiki pages, we do have a set of guidelines for behavior in our IRC channels. But in the community, we have the code of conduct too. So,
yeah, absolutely.
It kind of all goes hand in hand. And I hate to think that there's a group of adults that are in an IRC channel that can't figure it out. I mean, everybody's pretty relatively smart, right? So if somebody says, hey, that bothers me, don't do it.
Yeah.
Okay. Should probably listen to them.
It turns out, I learned this recently, it turns out there's some, I think the best way to refer to it is idiots on the internet. I didn't realize that they tended to hang out on the internet.
No. Yeah, I've been looking for
you
them.
You think?
Yeah.
It was a revelation.
Amazing.
So you've been working on with the Ubuntu Women team. You've been defining some strategy and some leadership around the team. What would you like to see as the future? I mean, I'm not talking about, I know you're very conscious to not speak for the other members of the team, but you, Amber Grainer, what do you dream of when you think of the Ubuntu Women team and what it could achieve?
I'm glad he asked you that.
I joined the team about a year ago. And as Liz, if you were to speak with Elizabeth Crumbaugh, she would tell you I had many phone conversations with her asking, okay, what is the group going to do now? What are we doing? Are we just gathering on IRC? Are we just having meetings every quarter? You know, what are we doing as a team? So as a team, I want to, you know, we are having bi-monthly meetings now. We are coming up with plans. We do have business cards now. We have posters that Melissa Draper designed, which are great posters and great business cards. She's a phenomenal designer for stuff like that. So great asset for the team as well. So, but we do. We have many talented people I don't want to turn everybody into developers because as in coders, not, I mean, contributors, yes, but coders. I mean, if somebody's skill is an artist, do you really want them, you know, do you really want that skill to go away? No, you want to tap into that skill. So while being a coder is a great thing and hacking code and, that kind of stuff is awesome and needed, so are all the other skills like organizing events and documentation, just all of that goes, translations, so it all goes together. So to me as a team, I say this often, you know, I'd like to see the team somehow, and I think we're doing a very good job of it right now, is we as women come together, we acknowledge that we all have differences, we all have different experiences, that we can agree to disagree at some points, but at the same time that we stand together and show a united front, because if we can't demonstrate it and articulate it, no offense, but how can we expect you to?
Right, right, right. So, and is in your leadership role on the project, is it, do you call the shots or do you help the team come to a decision on the strategy and the direction? How do you actually decide on what you want to work on in Ubuntu Women?
Well, no, I mean, some people have teased me and said, "Oh, you're a dictator," but I'm really not. The team has some great ideas. The team, they decide, you know, we want to do X. We all talk about it, and then we go forward and create a plan around it. And a good example is that, the International Women's Day competition. Melissa Drapert heard about this and wanted to do something with it, and she approached myself and a couple other people on the team, and we sort of, because it's a lot easier to look at a plan and tweak a plan rather than look at a blank page and say, now what do you want to do? So we came up with a plan, got some sponsorships in place, because what we didn't want to do is roll out a competition and then not have any sponsors. That's kind of embarrassing when you have to say, oh, we just want your stories, but we're not going to give you anything for it. So then we took it to the mailing list, let you know, the team take a look at it. And at any time, they could have decided, no, we don't want to do this. And we would have nixed it as an Ubuntu Women project. We probably would have kept it amongst ourselves, but we would have nixed it with the title of Ubuntu Women on it. So it's not right that any one person decides that. It's just sort of like, how do you keep it focused and how do you keep everybody going forward and scheduling regular meetings and looking at the agenda and seeing, okay, what do we need to do next and what's our next step and what needs to be improved?
So it's kind of like a traditional open source project, really, isn't it? It's like people who contribute to the group will help decide on what's going to happen, but there's no single kind of person who's in charge.
Right. And I think the leader of this group is more like, we're going to have elections. Matter of fact, we're going to call for elections during UDS in May. And we're going to ask, because I was an appointed leader because we'd never had a leadership position before. So the community council, which is kind of different, appointed me. I wasn't a peer elected leader. So I'm really excited and focused on making sure the team now appoints a leader that they want to guide them. And I've also been looking at the Trace Chicks approach, so which is three leaders versus one, and I think that's what the team's going to go with. So,
are you planning on continuing to apply, you know, to nominate yourself for leadership and to potentially be one of those three roles?
I would like to. I really, really like the project. And I said this to a couple people. It surprises me how much I enjoy the project, because I was never, I mean, I was involved in some women's groups in the past, but never one that the direct focus was just women. I've always been involved in like pretty male dominated industries, from the military to, you know, managing hotels and stuff like that. I just didn't see the need for it. But then once I got involved in it and came up, I had a couple issues that I need to deal with and had to ask for some opinions and some help. And the group is great. And so the more I get involved with it and the more I do with it, the more I want to do. So, yeah, I'd like to if the team wants me to.
Yeah. Now, it seems when some people, when they hear about the Ubuntu Women team, or they hear about Debian Women, or, you know, just a women's focus group inside of an open source community, a lot of men will kind of say, well, oh, you know, if there's an Ubuntu Women team, does that mean we have an Ubuntu Men team? You know, I mean, how do you respond to those kinds of comments?
Well, you know, it's funny that you should say that, because we had somebody that, you know, stood up an Ubuntu Men team, I don't know, what, a couple months ago or something. So it depends on their motivation for doing it. I'm certainly not going to tell somebody, oh, you can't go start that group. But if the sole purpose to start an Ubuntu Men group is to be exclusive and say, oh, we're just going to troll the women's group, or we're just going to go up against and sort of stall any effort that they have in the community, then that is not a good initiative. If, on the other hand, it's an Ubuntu men group geared to how can we help encourage women and work hand-in-hand with the Ubuntu women group to get more women involved, because right now we're looking at some stats, and I believe in the Ubuntu community, just looking at the Ubuntu membership, we're probably right at 4% women. So there's no shortage of men being involved. I mean, it's 96% men. So, you know, if an Ubuntu men group wants to stand up and work with us and go hand in hand with us on encouraging women, then sure, why not? Be in an inclusive group, but don't be exclusive and don't try to thwart the efforts of women.
It seems like a lot of these people, from what I've seen, is they think that if there's an Ubuntu women group that it's somehow giving women special treatment, which to me is a completely ludicrous proposition, because Ubuntu, from my experience, the Ubuntu women group has been there to improve the equality, gender equality in the Ubuntu community, as opposed to making a special sub-community that only applies to women. And it seems like some kind of latent paranoia that some of these people have, and which is why I think they tend to get tempted to, you know, to say, oh, well, we should have an Ubuntu men group because we need to, you know, reseat the balance. It seems a little crazy to me.
Well, yeah, and I think that a lot of people think that, oh, you're segregating yourselves and you're drawing attention to yourself and you're wanting special treatment, but really we're just a springboard in the community. I know when I got started back last February, the Ubuntu women community wasn't trying to recruit me and say, and stay here in this group. They were saying, okay, here's the greater community. What do you want to do in the community? And sort of said, they opened the door and said, there you go. So it wasn't that the group is wanting to collect all the women in the community and keep them in that group. On the contrary, it's, okay, make a stop by this group. How can we help you? And there's the rest of the community. Because when you're outnumbered like that, I think, Jono, you told the story at the leadership summit of going to get your nails done. And I'm sure that, you know, as awkward as you felt getting your nails done, being the only guy, sometimes that's how awkward, you know, women feel when they're only women amongst men.
Yeah, I mean, just to retell that quickly. So basically, there was a lot of discussion at that time going on when I was organizing the Community Leadership Summit last year, about a lot of discussion about women and open source. And I'd put myself into a mental frame of thinking where I was thinking, okay, I'm going to, instead of thinking people may have noticed I'm a bit opinionated at times. And I thought to myself, I'm going to ignore my own opinions and just listen and see, you know.
It was a valuable
learning experience.
Great exercise, yeah.
But, you know, every so often, I booked my wife in to go and get her nails done. I thought, I'll go and get my nails done as well. So I went in there, and this is a different appointment, and I went in there. I was the only guy in there.
Were really?
I was the only. it's funny because it's true, and I was the only guy in there, and I thought to myself, I kind of feel a bit weird about this. And as a heterosexual white male, I don't tend to be in many scenarios where I'm a minority. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm mm-hmm. you know, the definition of kind of like traditional, and it was really interesting having that experience. It made me understand better. Yeah. What it must be like to be a woman in the open source community, where you're surrounded by men, and then you've got, you know, some idiots on the internet to contend with too.
Well, the other thing about the group too is, you know, right now we're only sitting at 4% of the Ubuntu community, and I don't know what that magic number will be. Some people say 30%, some people say 40% is the magic number when you've reached that time to dissolve something. And I want to see this group sort of evolve to extinction when we're not needed anymore.
Yeah, I guess that's the ultimate goal, isn't it? Is that you have gender equality and you don't really need the Ubuntu women group, right?
Right. And so the goal is, like I said, not to keep women in the group, but build a network of women throughout the Ubuntu community that reaches into the greater open source community, whereas we encourage other women to get involved with all areas of open source, not just the women's group, but become a developer if you want to, create artwork if you want to, do documentation if you want to, translations. I mean, there's so many areas of the community where you can get involved in. To even try to name them all, you wouldn't even touch the tip of the iceberg.
Right. Now, because it's called the Ubuntu Women Team, one could assume that it's only open to women to participate, but men can participate as well, right?
It's open to all. It's very inclusive, and we have a lot of men who do participate in the group, because again, we're not exclusive. We don't want to be exclusive. We want our group to be an example of what we want to see the rest of the community be. And if we can't demonstrate that, again, how can we expect the rest of the community to demonstrate that?
Right. Now, a little while back, we had Randy Harper on to talk about FreeBSD. And towards the end of her interview, she kind of let out some opinions that she felt like there's some women in the open source community who are being quite destructive around this topic. And she was pretty firm in her opinions about it. What's your take on this? I mean, do you think there are some people who are more destructive around trying to encourage women into open source than others?
Well, I don't know if I would use the word destructive. I know there was a point probably back over the summer where I was sort of questioning why do some of the messages upset me and make me feel uncomfortable? And I had to question first, before I said anything, you know, what about that message made me uncomfortable? And I realized that a lot of it had to do with me not understanding some of the problems because I had not faced them. And until you face them, I don't think you can, unless I stand in somebody else's shoes, I can't really say what's destructive and what's not, because I know that there are things now, a year later, that I said to somebody, can you please not do that? Now I'm ready to just kind of take them off at the knees, but I don't. But there's moments when I'll bring a nuke to a knife fight because, you know, it just gets annoying at times.
Right. But do you think the situation's improved? Do you think it's a little less conflict orientated than it used to be? Or would you say it's not really changed that much?
No, I think that, how do I word this? I think that it's not as much as people, getting right in somebody's face automatically. Like, I asked somebody, if you're at a conference, and I know sometimes it can be very difficult, but if you're at a conference and somebody says something that's totally inappropriate, don't wait till 3 days later and crucify them on their blog. The speaker's not Christ. Just go up to them at that point, or convince other people to do that there too. Sometimes, you know, after the fact and not on the spot correction doesn't suit anybody. So I would know that if I was at a conference and I was given a talk and my topic or a slide or something, like if I had Chippendale dancers on my slide and it offended some guy in the audience, I wouldn't want them to wait 3 days and go back and talk about how sexist I was. I would want them to approach me on the spot. I would encourage people to do that.
So you think that in many ways, the best way of nipping things in the bud is for like just in place, kind of like take someone to one side and just say, you know what, you might want to kind of reconsider this. You think that's kind of the most appropriate way of dealing with things?
Well yeah, yes. Unless, let me say this, unless you can, like, my way of dealing with somebody publicly is if I can show a paper trail where I talk to them privately. And then I sent them an email, and then I sent them a public notice, and then public being let a group of people know about it as well, or maybe got involved with something, and things don't change, then it's time to organize some, you know, public campaign and say, enough. It's all in how you word it. You can be destructive. Like, somebody can say to me, I'm sure everybody knows somebody who, if they say good morning to you, your day brightens, it's great. And other people say good morning and you're like, oh my God, what do they want? it's still the same message. It just depends on who's delivering it.
Yeah, no, I think that's so true. Some people will be suspicious if you say, all right, how's it going? They'll be like, why is he being friendly with me? What does he want? So,
you know, people have accused me of, not being confrontational and not, not wanting to deal with issues and stuff like that. But I tell people, I dealt with this since the early 90s because I was in the military. So the sexism that was there is a lot different than the sexism you face in open source. Now, granted, it's still sexism, and it still needs to be dealt with, and you still need to say somebody, you know, knock it off. But at the same time, I don't ever want to see somebody come into a channel, and I know it's probably going to happen after this or what or this, you know, interview or whatever. But I don't want to see people come into a channel and anybody in any channel or any team feel like, oh, we can't kick them out because we got this code of conduct and we have to listen to what they say. No, if they're offensive and they're wrong, they got to leave.
Yeah, I think going back to your point earlier on about the Ubuntu code of conduct, like the Ubuntu code of conduct is there to apply to everything, right? I mean, it's if somebody is offensive in any project, and that includes sexism, racism, aggressive nature, that, any of that kind of stuff, then they should be taken into account. I think it's interesting what you say about kind of the approach of, you know, if someone does something that you find offensive, then you should take them to one side and have a word with them privately first. And then maybe another time if they don't refrain from doing it. And then at that point, if it requires public attention being brought to them, then do it. And I've always thought that kind of approach, like starting off softly instead of just going in there, like, as you say, you know, kind of, you know, taking a nuclear weapon to a knife fight. So do you find that approach works? Like when you were in the military, how did you deal with those kinds of things? Because there must be horrific sexism in aspects of the military.
Well, I can't really use me as an example about how to deal with that, because I had some guy one time that actually said something to me, and I said, you know, I'm going to hit you if you don't stop that. And he kept on. And then I really did not mean to connect with his nose. I meant to grab his, you know, get his shoulder, and I actually broke his nose. So, so I'm probably not the best person to ask how do you deal with that. But the thing is, though, there are times when aggressive behavior is needed, and there's a time and place for all that. And the best, because I haven't personally seen. Been involved in something where I wanted to act that aggressively in the open source community, but I have seen it in other aspects of society where my daughter, for example, she's in middle school, and some of the girls are afraid to go and talk to one of their teachers because they know that they're going to say, oh, quit being a girl and that kind of stuff. Well, that is not the, you know, that shouldn't be tolerated. I mean, that teacher should be able to listen to those young girls and see what their point is. And I'm not saying that women in open source are like middle school kids, but what I am saying is that there are times when, going back to a conference where you want to confront somebody, that there are moments where it's very uncomfortable and you can't go and confront them because of a whole host of reasons. But at some point it has to be dealt with. I'm not saying that honey's always, you know, honey versus vinegar is always the best option, because there are times when that big stick is needed and you do need to be aggressive. So I think it all depends on the time, the place, the person. There's so many variables that go into it.
I mean, so we have a question on IRC from Christina, who is asking if you've worked with other groups as well. I mean, you're obviously the leader of the Ubuntu Women team. Have you worked with any of these other groups, such as Linux Chicks or Debian Women or groups such as that?
Not yet. I'm just starting now to get to know some of the leaders in the Linux Chicks group. I met Sharon out at Scale. Akana Peck is a member of the Ubuntu Women's group, so she's kind of filling me in on how that goes. Mackenzie Morgan's a member of both Linux Chicks and Ubuntu Women. So yeah, I haven't been involved directly, only because I live out in the sticks. So we don't have a lot of these, a lot of opportunities to meet up and participate in some of these groups. That's not to say that I don't appreciate what they do. And the more I get to know the other women in the community who are part of those groups, the more I appreciate their efforts and their initiatives and what they do to encourage women.
Right. So, if somebody wants to get involved with Ubuntu Women, how do they get involved? Where should they look? Where can you point them towards? What can they get started with?
To get involved in the Ubuntu community?
In Ubuntu Women.
Oh, basically, just visit the website, which is ubuntu-women.com. And then from there, there's our wiki pages. There's the mentoring guide. There's the link to the planets. You can see all of our blogs. There's the link to the forum. And there's also a link on how to get involved. So if you stop by, if you're an IRC person, you can pop into the IRC channel. We have two. It's Ubuntu-Women and Ubuntu-Women-Project on Freenode. And you can just pop in there. Ask a couple questions, introduce yourself, or jump on the mailing list. Introduce yourself to the mailing list and let us know what your interests are, and we can point you pretty much to anywhere, any corner of the community.
Great, great stuff. And then finally, if somebody wants to participate in Ada Lovelace Day, which is obviously today, where do they need to look for that? How can they find out more about that?
They need to go to findingada.com and... they can read all about it there. But basically, all they have to do is, if they've got a blog, just do something that says Celebrating Ada Lovelace Day, profile a woman that's in science and technology, open source, talk about their accomplishments, how they've inspired you, and let the world know about that. Let the world know that women are being recognized, and they're not this silent group of workers that are invisible to the world, that we are here and that we are making a difference.
There's also a great blog called Adafruit.com at Adafruit.com/blog, where they're doing a post an hour of women in high tech and open source. It's really a great blog with lots of very interesting women. If you want to see what amazing things women are doing in technology right now, it's really a great blog. Adafruit.com.
Well, I'll tell you what, just, you know, with today about highlighting women in open source, I have to say, one of the people for me is Amber. I think Amber's just done an absolutely stunning job with Ubuntu Women, and not only the Ubuntu Women team, but also a variety of other teams inside the Ubuntu community. Amber actually got involved in Ubuntu by writing a series of very opinionated blog posts about Ubuntu. And she developed this reputation of being kind of the, you know, just this kind of honest, kind of frank set of views. And since then, she's kind of grown that set of views and that reputation into being a phenomenal contributor. So thanks to you, Amber, for coming on the show as well.
Thanks, John. Thanks, Leo, for having me.
Great to have you. Yeah. I'm so glad you did this, Jono. I knew it was Ada Lovelace Day. I just forgot that we could do something about it. So I'm really glad. Thank you, Amber, for doing this.
You're welcome.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Thanks,
bye-bye.
Amber. Take care. Bye-bye.
Jono, you came through. You protected my reputation. People think I'm a misogynist, but thanks to you, they know I'm a misogynist.
I'm here to help.
Thank you. So, it's funny. I was reading this Adafruit Industries blog, and it's kind of really inspiring to see what all of these people are doing. Sometimes I feel funny kind of highlighting women as a separate class. You know, I almost feel like you don't want to. But we're not really in a post-gender world, so I guess...
I think it's one of the... My view has always been, it's one of those situations whereby if the world was... If there were basically equal opportunities, I think, which in many cases they're not, then...
Then we wouldn't have to do it.
Then we wouldn't need to.
Right.
But my view has always been, you know, like if there's a demographic that's having a tough time of it at times, then a little bit of positive discrimination is... not necessarily a bad thing.
So. We have to step up.
Yep. So I'm really glad. I'm really glad that Dan got ill.
Thank you, Dan.
Thank you, Dan.
For giving us a chance to do the right thing. But I'm sure we'll get Dan on as soon as he's feeling better and talk.
We will. He's going to be a great guest coming to the show.
And as we mentioned, Randall will be back next week. But thank you, Jono, for keeping the source alive.
No problem. It's been a lot of fun.
Jono Bacon is the author of The Art of Community, a new book about community and his experiences as a community manager at Ubuntu. You can find that everywhere books are sold. And, of course, he is on Ubuntu all the time, running it all the time, except when he's running Windows to use Skype. You have my deepest apologies. Thank you, Jono. We'll see you all next time on Floss Weekly.